You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on commercial stations from coast to coast, via Dial Global on Pacifica radio stations, non-commercial stations all around the United States, Europe, and Africa, on American Forces Radio all around the planet, on Free Speech TV as televised simulcast as television, on Dish Network and Direct Network and Dish and Direct TV, both satellite channels. Welcome to our program. Brian, there's a lot going before I introduce Brian. There's a lot going on in the news today that isn't just about the hurricane that sort of happened in some places and sort of didn't in others. And I want to get into that as we go on through the day, in particular Rick Perry's most recent thoughts on Social Security. Michelle Bachmann has a message to us from God. This is very interesting. The Islamophobia machine is running full tilt boogie. Daryl Issa is screaming that he has been defamed. Let's take a look at that. And so anyhow, that and this idea that who's responsible for this bad economy? Why is it that since basically 1981 until today, while household income has gone up, it's gone up in large part because two people are working in households, individual income has stayed flat. In fact, over the last 9-10 years, it's actually gone down. What could be accounting for that? Brian Hughes on the line. He writes for the Washington Examiner, the Washington and Maryland politics reporter, the website WashingtonExaminer.com, which, Brian, it comes to the TV station where I do the studio where I do the TV show in the evening, and it looks to me like it's a fairly conservative publication. Do you describe yourself that way?
Sure. I would say that on the commentary side, but now I cover the White House as a straight news reporter, so
okay,
it's right down the middle. But so, appreciate you reading.
Yeah. So you wrote a piece here saying many Americans still blame President George W. Bush for the dismal state of the economy, according to a poll released. You think, however, that Mr. Obama should take the blame. Do I take that right?
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. I would say the White House isn't exactly doing backflips over the results of the poll. As it notes, more than 6 in 10 Americans say, that they are unhappy with Mr. Obama. More specifically, they say that he is responsible, or not responsible, but that he's not handling the economy in the right way. The silver lining for the White House in this, however, is although people are unhappy, when you ask them who was most responsible, more than half still blame President George W. Bush, while less than a third say it's President Obama.
And what I find most interesting, when you drill down into these statistics, and not right. I don't know about the details of this poll, but I've seen 7 now over the last 8 or 9 months that actually asked this question,
right.
And that is, what should be done to stimulate the economy? And the vast majority, I mean, we're talking well over 60%, in some cases well over 70% of Americans,
right,
suggest that going back to some variation on Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal, in other words, government hiring, putting money in people's pockets, extending unemployment benefits, even if you have to borrow to do it, figuring out a way to get money into the hands of the real job creators, the people who go out and buy things, creating demand so that factories can be built to make that demand and people will be hired to fulfill that demand.
Right.
But that's the way to stimulate the economy. And somehow that always gets overlooked, particularly in the conservative press.
Well, you know, that's, I think you're going to see that message from President Obama around Labor Day when he releases his new job plan. It's likely to include things like funding for construction through an infrastructure bank, that type of thing. But, I mean, that's the debate you're going to see. It's similar to what you saw with the debt ceiling. Republicans are going to say they don't want any new spending. You can attribute whatever, you want to both the right and the left, but, that's the message Obama will keep hammering in the weeks ahead.
Is there, so you don't want to get into an opinion style debate on this topic?
I'll leave that up to you.
Okay. You'll hold your integrity as a straight down the middle news reporter. In that case,
I hate to disappoint.
That's quite all right. Is there any reporting in the Washington Examiner or any other publications on the widespread belief that I think has been exacerbated by several statements Mitch McConnell has famously made, but others that have been made by people like Eric Cantor and Paul Ryan less famously, that the Republican game plan between now and 2012 is to prevent the president from doing anything that might stimulate the economy. Well, Rick Perry came right out and said it would be treasonous if the Fed did anything to stimulate the economy.
Right.
Because basically they plan on running on a bad economy and they want it to be as bad as possible in November of 2012.
Yeah. Well, you know, talking, I don't know if I'd use that exact language, but talking to analysts, people here in town, they do openly question, you know, if Republicans are unwilling to cede ground on the verge of government default, why they would all of a sudden compromise as you get closer and closer to an election. I think you would find very few people who would say they're all going to coalesce and sing kumbaya around whatever Obama releases and, you know, about a week or so.
Well, I'm not even suggesting that. What I'm saying is that it certainly appears to me, and this is my opinion, that the game plan, the primary game plan, you know, just like, you know, Reagan ran against Carter's inability to get the hostages out of Iran, the game plan here is the inability of President Obama to get the unemployment rate below 8%. And, you know, the fact of the matter is we have 24 states with Republican governors that have cut spending, cut taxes, seen an average 0.5%, 0.5% drop in their GDP, and those 25 states have laid off almost 500,000 employees. If that had not happened, unemployment right now would be 7.7%. So, and you've got 25 states where non-Republican governors, or in some cases Republican governors, but not under Republican control, where they've increased taxes, increased spending, they've seen their GDP go up an average of 0.6%, and there's been no cuts in government workers. Had that been nationwide, we'd have a decent unemployment numbers. This just, you know, looks to me like an organized Republican strategy.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, you could say a variety of things in terms of motive. Obviously, as you get closer to 2012, they're going to harp on the fact that Obama said, you know, with my stimulus package, unemployment's going to be below 8%.
Actually, he didn't say that. He didn't say that. It was two of his advisors said
okay.
that.
Okay. Well, the Obama
he never said that.
Yeah. I was speaking vaguely, but advisors for President Obama, the fact that, you know, President Obama said himself, if I don't turn this thing around, I'm going to be a one-term president. Those are things you're likely to see them harping on. You can say they're doing it for political reasons.
But harping on it and causing it to happen are two different things.
Yeah, no, I would
and it looks to me like they're trying to cause it to happen.
You know, I'm not going to, you know, I'm sure they would resist that narrative, and I'm not going to say they're doing it one way or another.
Right.
But
you talk to Republicans all the time. How do they rebut the suggestion that there's never been an example in history of a country that cut its way to prosperity? There's hundreds of examples of countries that spent their way to prosperity. I mean, we did in the 1950s after World War II, for example. We had a debt that was 126% of GDP, you know, a third again larger than our debt right now. Yeah. And we didn't cut anything. Eisenhower went on a spending binge. You know, the Eisenhower highway system, hospitals, schools, built bridges, dams, and we grew our way out of it.
Yeah, I mean, they would counter that, you know, as the midterms election showcased that, you know, especially with a lot of the freshman lawmakers, they were sent to Washington directly with the imperative to cut spending, and that, you know, it just wouldn't make political sense for them to all of a sudden abandon that.
You know. Even at the risk of increasing joblessness.
Well, I'm sure they would dispute that, but according to those on the left, could say that.
All right, Brian, thanks for dropping by.
Thanks for the time.
WashingtonExaminer.com. You can read Brian Hughes' columns over there, and a fine publication it is. We'll be back. I gotta tell you what Michelle Bachmann is up to here. It's amazing to her. And Rick Perry, wow. Our gift from God.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And, you know, there's a lot of truth to the fact that it's the economy, stupid. And, well, we'll get into that, too.
Another day in some other place. And someone please remind me where the hell we are. Another night, I feel the thunder light.
Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you, talk radio and TV for the sane among us. Oh, my. Michelle Bachmann, the hurricane, which actually is, you know, I remember the 5 years Louise and I lived in Vermont. One of the towns just down the road from us, literally, well, the town didn't wash away, but several of the houses washed away. And the town all got together and helped out the people who lost their homes and helped them rebuild, you know, a little higher up the river where it wouldn't get washed away again. And it was a great example of a community coming together. And then the town bought the land from them and turned it into like a park so that, you know, they wouldn't have just lost it because they couldn't get flood insurance. I mean, the land at that point was pretty useless or valueless, let's say. But it was very useful as a park during that, you know, 99.9% of the time, and it's not flooding. So it's interesting to see. This is the way America was always put together, right? This is the American way. We help each other out. Now, there is a powerful strain of anti-Americanism that disguises itself as the Republican Party and the so-called conservative movement that I think would horrify moderate conservatives like Dwight Eisenhower and even serious conservatives like Barry Goldwater, who actually believed that government can be and should be a force for good. Now, they might have argued where the line should be drawn, and between Eisenhower and Goldwater, there's a big difference in where the line should be drawn. But none of them would have gone so far as Reagan did and say, the government is not the solution, the government is the problem. This anti-American idea that started in the late 70s with these Republican ideologues and the think tanks that came out of Lewis Powell's memo in 1973 or 74, the Heritage Foundation, the Cato Institute, in particular this libertarian idea that government is evil, government is the problem. This idea that we should be a nation of rugged individualists, you know, to hell with people during disasters. We don't have a collective responsibility to each other. I mean, here, Ron Paul, for example, was asked, you know, as a libertarian, you're in favor of abolishing all these federal programs, right? You think that, you know, kids should not get food stamps. People who are hungry shouldn't get food stamps. So what if the coal mine in their town, you know, was depleted or the factory in their town moved to China or things totally out of their control threw them into poverty? Tough luck. They should not be getting food stamps. They should not be getting charity. There should not, at least from the government, there should be no Social Security insurance program for people in their old age. This is Ron Paul. All of you who think Ron Paul is so cool because he thinks pot should be decriminalized and prostitution should be legalized, there should be no Social Security. There would be no Social Security in Ron Paul's world. There would be no Medicare in Ron Paul's world, health insurance for elderly people who can't buy it on the open market. And you will not find an insurance company that will sell you a policy if you're over 65. There would be no Medicaid. That is, one in five children in America living in poverty, having access to medical services because of these programs. None of that would exist in Ron Paul's world. Poor children in Appalachia or urban centers or rural Oklahoma, you name it. Poor kids whose local communities don't have a substantial enough property tax base to be able to take care of kids who have special needs in schools, whether it's special needs because they are behind or special needs because they're really gifted. Forget it. Nothing for you guys in Ron Paul's world. No federal education monies. No, nothing. None of this Title I stuff. No, you know, U.S. Department of Agriculture. We've got kids whose only major source of high-quality nutrition is their school lunch. Do away with that. This is Ron Paul's world. Ron Paul is so extreme in this. The libertarians, Republicans who want to smoke dope and get laid, they're even beyond Republican. Well, actually, they're not, because this is what Republicans are these days. This is what Ron Paul had to say about FEMA.
Congressman, you would really, at this point, do away with FEMA and all the things it's doing to help hundreds of thousands of people along the East Coast?
Have you read the reports that came out of New Orleans and all those wonderful things they did, giving checks to people who didn't even live there, by sending in hundreds of millions of dollars worth of trailers that they had to junk because they didn't meet FEMA standards? No, it's a system of bureaucratic central economic planning, which is a fallacy that is deeply flawed. Anybody who wants to defend this department and this agency, they have a tough argument to argue for.
Actually, FEMA is doing a pretty good job right now. But right now, FEMA has a professional director and professional people. One of the things, Thomas Frank wrote a book called The Wrecking Crew, specifically about this topic, that Republicans, after the Nixon administration, Republicans, when they are in power and when they have the ability, will always put incompetent people in charge of federal agencies, like the lawyer for a horse judging association being put in charge of FEMA back with Katrina. And then when the federal agency screws up, they stand around and go, see, told you so. Federal agencies don't work worth squat. Here's Rick Perry following up on the same thing. Oh, Social Security. You know, Social Security has not missed a single check in 70 years. Here's Rick Perry.
I see the Social Security as a program that was put in place to help people after they retired. But we need to have a conversation with America, just like we're having right here today, and admit that it is a Ponzi scheme for these young people. It is, I mean, the idea that they're working and paying into Social Security today, that they're under the current program, that it's going to be there for them, is a lie. It is a monstrous lie on this generation. It was a retirement program, and actually it's turned into a tax now.
Yeah, and Rick Perry telling a monstrous lie. Social Security is just fine. It's going to be fine for another, until probably long after Rick Perry's dead, at least another 27 years. Not that I'm wishing him ill.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And even after that, it can pay 70% of benefits for forever. And if we just raise the rates so that Bill Gates paid the same rate as average people, it's fine.
Some folks are born, silver spoon in hand. Y'all don't to help themselves, dog. But when the tax man comes to the door, y'all the house look like a rum and say, yes. It ain't me, it ain't me. I ain't no millionaire star, dog.
Helping you win the water cooler wars, Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back. And Michelle Bachman, God's trying to speak to us. And, here's what she said.
I don't know how much God has to do to get the attention of the politicians. We've had an earthquake. We've had a hurricane. He said, are you going to start listening to me here? Listen to the American people.
And she went on to say, what did he want us to listen to? Stop spending. Now, let's see. The last I looked in the Bible, Jesus said, you're supposed to feed hungry people. You're supposed to heal sick people. You're supposed to clothe naked people. You're supposed to visit those who are in prison unjustly, implicitly working to prevent them from being there. Give water to those who are thirsty. All of those things, if you is a plural you like government, that's called spending. And Michelle Bachman says that God's trying to get our attention and tell us to tell the poor people, the hungry people, screw you, to tell the children who by no fault of their own live in a home in a community where there's not enough food, the schools don't work, you're on your own, to tell the sick, insurance, you don't need no health insurance. We've got 50 million people in America with no health insurance. We're doing fine. It just makes me nuts. Rama in Williamstown, Vermont. Hey, Rama, I hope the flooding is not too bad there where you are.
Hi, Tom. How you doing? Hey, the flooding where I'm specifically doing right now is fine because we're way up a hill. But yeah, there was a lot of, catastrophic level flooding down in the southern third of the state. There was some of it did get up to the central part of the state, but it was more isolated. But, I know people that were very directly and hugely impacted.
Ouch.
And, of course, this is the second round of the flooding that we've had here in Vermont. We had a huge amount of flash flooding going on this spring. And
Well, Rama, it must be. Vermont is the only state whose governor campaigned on a pledge of statewide single-payer health care, and every person in Vermont will be insured. Vermont is the only state whose legislature, the House and the Senate, have both voted for it, and the governor signed it into law. If Michelle Bachmann is right, this is God telling y'all.
God's wrath. But this leads into the last part of my statement there. You know, we've had a horrendous amount of tornadoes around this country this year, too.
Yeah.
Big, strong tornadoes.
Yeah, mile wide.
Yeah. You know, it's crazy to think that we as a society are supposed to go through life from day to day without helping each other out when our houses get destroyed, our businesses get flooded, we lose our cars, our brothers and sisters get hurt or killed. You know, it's insane, and it ought to be discussed just on that simple level. And I think you do a good job getting there.
Thank you, Rama. Thank you. Very, very well said. Appreciate it. And let me just, you know, for the record, I don't think that this is God trying to tell us anything other than, I mean, if, you know, assuming that there is an individual sentient deity who is actively and aggressively trying to send us messages, the message would be, stop pumping carbon into your atmosphere. We have 5% more moisture in the air right now than we have in the last 10,000 years. Bill McKibben last Friday on our TV show said the Holocene is over. I mean, literally an era. The Holocene period is over. We don't know what the name of the new era is. But this, you know, 1 degree permanent increase in temperature, the Holocene is over. Roger in Los Angeles. Hey, Roger, what's up?
Hey, Tom. You had the first guest talking about the re-election of Obama with the high unemployment rate.
Right.
Those norms for unemployment is also rising. Before Nixon won in 68 or something, the unemployment rate used to be, you cannot win unless it's like 3% or less or something like that. But Nixon won with 5.2 or 5.5% during in 68. And then it rose again when Reagan got reelected in 84. He won with 7-point-something% unemployment rate.
Right.
So Obama, if he can articulate that when he took office, it was 10% and he has brought it down to 8% and he's doing, you know, so it all depends on his communication with the citizens. This may be the new norm now. Because Japan, right now, their norm is 4.5. It used to be 0%. So everywhere, the norm is going up. It's not the same old, capitalism we are in.
Yeah, the norm is going up.
It's up to Obama to do the communication, and he can win with 8.8%, I think.
Yeah, I think that you're right, Roger. Thank you, and your point is well taken. And the unemployment rate is going up in those countries that, you know, historically have been the industrialized countries and the manufacturers of the world. And when they started importing goods from cheaper labor countries, China, Vietnam, et cetera, whether it was Japan buying into neoliberalism after 5 decades of protectionism, or whether it was the United States after 20 decades of protectionism buying into neoliberalism, into so-called free trade economics, into Tom Friedman economics. By the way, brilliant piece today by Dean Baker, an actual economist at the Center for Economic and Policy Research, CEPR.org is their website. You can also read it at truthout.org, in which Thomas Friedman spews nonsense with hurricane force, just calling out Thomas Friedman. It's brilliant. Helen, in Ithaca, New York. Hey, Helen, what's up?
Hi. Well, I'm calling from the Twilight Zone here. Rod Sterling is from here.
Oh, I didn't know that. Really?
Yeah, he's from here. And I did some legal work for his daughter, Connie, who's a very nice person. But anyhow,
interesting.
I'm not a lawyer, actually. I just did it as a student. I was...
Yeah.
But I was calling, like, you know, we've got to, like, seize the moment here. Anyone who's just upset with things and who isn't as dumb as dirt. Sorry, that was a vulgar thing to say.
No, it's okay to trash Republicans occasionally.
I mean, like, blue-collar people who vote against their own interests.
Right.
You know, it's like what they're doing right now is just so apparent to anyone who isn't totally ignorant. Like, these people are nuts, you know, and we've got just about another year before there's a new election, and we've got anyone who, if they're listening to your show on the radio, they should get involved in politics in their local community and get people registered to vote, you know. There's a yep. lot of people who don't vote, and anyone can register anybody to vote.
Well, be very wary. There are some states now where ALEC-sponsored legislation has been passed where if you don't do it right, if you don't, for example, turn it in within 3 days, all of a sudden you can be subject to fine or imprisonment simply for registering people to vote. So be sure and find out the law. And the way to find that out is to contact your local Democratic Party. And in most states, there is still time to put yourself on the slate and become a Democratic Party precinct committee person. There is still time in most states. So show up. You're absolutely right.
And we're having a meeting tonight, so thank you.
We being who?
We being the Democratic Committee in the ward where I live.
Oh, cool. Are you a Democratic Committee precinct person?
Yeah, I was drafted. I'm actually like a socialist. I'll publicly admit it, you know.
I call myself a Democratic socialist.
I lived in France. 4.5 years, so.
Yeah, France works quite well, thank you very much, and the French people are very happy with it. The problem with the word socialist is that the old Soviet Union used that word, too, and it meant a very, very different thing.
Well, a Stalinist communist is not the same thing as a socialist.
You betcha. You betcha. Bernie Sanders calls himself a democratic socialist.
Yeah, but it means the commons. It doesn't mean that everything's publicly owned. They mean like the utility companies are publicly owned.
Right. It means the commons are publicly owned.
Yeah, but not like, you know, anybody can have their own business. It's not like, you know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
well said. Well, and Helen, good on you for saying yes when you were drafted to be a member of the Democratic Party as a precinct committee person. I'm going to move along. Thank you very much for the call, though, Helen. Great to hear from you. Tom in Chino Hills, California. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about our economy and what I think we need to do to bring it back is, Ross Perot mentioned years ago that NASA was going to be a disaster to us, and it truly has proven to be so. The biggest weapon the United States has is our purchasing power.
Yeah.
And sending $300 billion a year to China is just crazy. I mean, we used to make the best stuff in the world right here in the USA.
Well, apropos of what you're saying, Tom, here's what Ross Perot had to say during that campaign, that famous campaign in 1992.
And you can move your factory south the border, pay a dollar an hour for labor, hire a young 25. That's assuming you've been in business for a long time. You've got a mature workforce. Pay a dollar an hour for your labor. Have no health care. That's the most expensive single element making a car. Have no environmental controls, no pollution controls, and no retirement. And you don't care about anything but making money. There will be a giant sucking sound going south.
You know, 20% of Americans voted for this guy, even though he represented no political perspective whatsoever other than just that one issue. And his vice presidential candidate seemed to be in the middle stages of dementia.
Yeah, true.
I just find that amazing.
A couple times.
I think
that
any
guy in it.
Go ahead.
Republicans tried to make him out to be a nut. I mean, that's the way to put him down is to bash somebody, call him a nut.
Well, so did the Democrats.
So everything he said pretty much comes true.
Yep, you're absolutely right. And Thomas Friedman's still out there singing this stuff, and it's so sad. It's so sad. Tom, thank you for the call. And it is time for America to wake up to the fact that a country that doesn't make anything is a country that gets progressively poorer.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And if you want to make things in America, you have to have something called protectionism. Now, maybe you can come up with some new slick name for it. Let Frank Luntz focus group it, but we need protectionism.
It's not about the money.
This is so cool, the way, you know, Dean Baker just calling out Thomas Friedman. I've been doing this for years, and in two of my books and on the radio for years, and I feel like this lone voice in the wilderness. And here's his headline, Thomas Friedman spews nonsense with hurricane force. Friedman goes into he says, the producer savers in North Europe are now dealing with a new plan for the overspenders, the pigs, Portugal, Italy, Ireland, Greece, and Spain. And he seems to have conflated Thomas Friedman. He doesn't know the difference between the European Union and the Eurozone. The European Union is a political group, the Eurozone an economic group. And there are a number of countries like Sweden and Denmark and the United Kingdom who are not members of the Eurozone. But anyhow, Dean points out Spain and Ireland were actually running budget surpluses. Italy and Portugal had only modest budget deficits. You know what took down these countries? The banksters. It's just that simple. It's the banksters. They've been taking down pension funds all over the country. The banksters have pulled off this trillion-dollar heist, multi-trillion-dollar heist, lined their pockets with millions of dollars. And anyway, John in Fairfax. Hey, John, you wanted to talk about Ron Paul.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Ron Paul is, as if I remember correctly from the 2008 election, he's a physician who was against abortion 100%.
He is. He has held numerous positions on abortion over the years, but when he decided to run seriously for president as a Republican, when he was running as a libertarian for president, he was all in favor of any woman having any right to choose any abortion anytime. When he became the Republican candidate for president, he suddenly became opposed to a woman's right to choose an abortion. Yes.
Oh, so he is a politician. He's a flip-flopper.
At least with regard to abortion. With most other issues, that's one of those litmus test issues for the Republican Party. With most other issues, he has been quite consistent with his libertarian perspectives, including his anti-war positions, for which I applaud him.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that libertarians are in favor of is the liquidation of all public properties like parks and forests and so on.
Yes, he does not believe we should have any national parks. Let's sell off Yellowstone to General Electric. Let them turn to Disney. Let them turn into a theme park and charge us admission.
Right. Hey, last week, right after the earthquake, someone called you about rock fracturing possibly causing the quake.
Yeah, I was speculating about it.
Right.
Go ahead.
Well, anyway, you said that there would be no news coverage, and Sunday's paper out here, the San Francisco Chronicle's business section, had a front page article about it, and it left totally. It's by David R. Baker, and it left the readers with basically no solution, even though a Stanford professor claimed that there's no problem. You know, the rock fracturers know where the fault zones are, so they don't want to do anything stupid, and you know, it left the door wide open.
Yeah. My prediction was not that you would not see any newsprint. In fact, I said you'll probably see this on the internet. But if you watch network television, you'll see these ads where they show little kids playing and beautiful fields and parks and then they kind of zoom into this thing that's just this little square area with a pipe coming out of the top of it, and it's a gas well. And they talk about how natural gas is powering America and how they're very slick about it. They say America has, now they're doing this with the oil pipeline too as well. They say America has enough natural gas and oil reserves to last it, you know, to supply all its needs. Well, that's true if you take North America and you include Mexico and Canada, which of course is what they're saying. But in any case, the natural gas ads are basically pushback against Gasland and other things that are raising questions about fracking. And because the natural gas, the fracking industry, is pouring tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars into network and cable television advertising, I would be astounded if we ever, ever saw any serious coverage on any network that suggested that there might be a link between fracking and the big earthquake we had in D.C. last week.
I'll keep an eye out for it, Tom.
Yeah, okay. Thanks a lot, John. Good to hear from
All
you.
Right,
I appreciate
bye.
The call. Thanks. Stan in Jacksonville. Hey, Stan, what's up?
Well, I'd like to pay a tribute. We need to do that on the show occasionally, and I've called you from down here before, and you may know the name. Many listeners would not, but Stetson Kennedy, born and raised in Jacksonville, spent his entire life in Greater Jacksonville, except when he fled the country for a while. Literary figure, the man who helped infiltrate the Ku Klux Klan down here, civil rights, labor man, labor activist all his life, passed away at the age of 94.
Hmm.
And he's a legendary figure. I'd urge everyone to call him up on the computer, check his books. He had folklore books, political active books going back to the 1930s,
right.
1940s. He was active until almost the end, if you will, at 94, and that's not surprising.
Yeah.
His last public appearance, and it was a picture of this in the local paper yesterday, the local paper, which is the website, is jacksonville.com. Had a photo of him shaking hands about a month ago at the age of 94 with our new mayor.
That's great. And that's Stetson, like
Alvin Brown, I'm happy to point out.
That's Stanson, Stanson.
Stetson,
like the hat.
Stetson as a hat, right. Stetson, yeah. Kennedy, born and raised in the city in the 1930s. Political activist, I mean, earlier than that, obviously, wrote his first literary book, a literary classic, in the 1930s. His book called Unmasking the Klan is legendary for helping to expose the Ku Klux Klan in this area.
Stan, we got it. I just have 1 minute left. I want to get one more caller in. Thanks a lot, Stan. Very, very good, very nice tribute, and thank you for making it. Vince in Milford, Illinois. Hey, Vince, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just watched The World According to Monsanto on, I think it was Free Speech TV yesterday. And
it's a great documentary.
I've been involved. Pardon?
It's a great documentary.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it definitely was. But I'm having a hard time keeping a positive outlook on this. Can you tell me where we're making some progress against?
You know, this country has, Vince, we had slavery, we overcame it, we had women who were fourth-class citizens, we overcame that, we had a civil war, we got through that, we fought two world wars, we got through that, we got through the flu epidemic, we've gotten through four or five major depressions, including two big ones, 1893 and 1929, we're in the midst of another one, and we had a time in the late 1890s when big corporations were even more powerful than they are now, so... I think that, you know, good things are happening. Robert Greenwald up next.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Fair and only slightly unbalanced. Welcome back to the second hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you. In the last hour, we had on Brian Hughes of the Washington Examiner, the conservative local paper here in D.C. Does President Obama really own this economy, and where is that going to go? We'll get back to that and a few of the other political tactics and strategies. Michelle Bachmann saying that God's trying to send us a message with the strange weather. What might that message be? We'll talk about that. But right now, Robert Greenwald is on the line, the filmmaker, political activist, founder of Brave New Films, one of the really truly extraordinary human beings on this earth at this moment. I don't know where we'd be without you, Robert. At Robert Greenwald, WALD, the Twitter, Koch Brothers Exposed.com, his latest adventure. Robert, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. It's wonderful to be with you.
Thank you. Very pleased to have you. There's a new majority in the Wake County, North Carolina School Board. Do I have that right?
You do have that right. It's actually been about 6 months now, and the new majority is due to the Koch brothers and Americans for Prosperity undertaking a long-term campaign to change the way people think about education, to change the way they think about public education, and to destroy a school system that was one of the best in terms of economic, social diversity. And it's really quite tragic, but it does show the impact of their dollars and the way that they're reaching out across not just federal elections and not just state elections, but very local ones.
Yeah, and let me point out, by the way, Coke is spelled K-O-C-H, not as in the drink, but a K. So KochBrothersExposed.com, K-O-C-H. In your piece, and people can go to KochBrothersExposed.com and watch the video. There's a series of segments now. You're up to what, number five right now?
Yes, we are, and they can go there, and they're also on Facebook, where there's a fantastic group of 15,000 or so people who are very active in helping get the word around about these, or also, as you've said, on Twitter.
Great, great. And you talk about Rita Rackenstraw and Karen Simon, who were school board candidates, and they had no idea that Americans for Prosperity, people think of Americans for Prosperity, they think, you know, the big group behind the Tea Party, they think the, funders of major Republican candidates, a group that might be supporting, maybe supported John McCain, I don't know. But, you know, you think of them as a big national group. I mean, this is Dick Armey. He's a multimillionaire, very powerful guy. I don't think most people think of Americans for Prosperity. I don't think they realize that it's one of the Koch brothers' front groups or that they're big funders of it, shall we say. And B, I don't think that they realize that this big national group is going to, well, these two women said, we came to a gunfight armed with knives, that they're going to go into a local school board election with millions of dollars?
Well, you know, the Koch brothers are
hundreds of thousands?
Yeah, yes, hundreds of thousands. They are driven by ideology, and their ideology and their, which serves their economic self-interest, and we've talked about this, Tom, and, you know, you've done an absolutely brilliant job in helping people understand how all of this works. Their ideology, their economic self-interest, part of that is proving that government can do nothing. And one of the pillars of government, in addition to Social Security, which we understand they're attacking, one of the pillars of government is, of course, public education. So we see that the Koch brothers, listen to this, have given over $20 million to think tanks in D.C., and those think tanks are turning out papers attacking public education. Then you see those attacks taken and used at the local level by Americans for Prosperity, laying a groundwork, laying a framework, and getting people to really question, gee, is public education working? And in this case, the code words are all Southern words around, you know, the busing and local
busing.
Education.
Forced busing is the word.
Yes, exactly.
the phrase. I'm old enough to remember George Wallace. Segregation now, segregation forever. In fact, you end your clip with that. Let's talk about this, and they created this alliance in this particular, in Wake County, North Carolina, with the Wake County Community Alliance, the Wake County Citizens for Quality Education, Wake Cares, the Wake County Republican Party. The Republican Party, you know, I get that. That is an institution. Are these other three institutions inventions of AFP or the Koch brothers, or did they spring out? Where did they come from?
Well, as we know with the Koch brothers, again, what they do is they're using the laws brilliantly, Tom, so that we can't find out exactly what and who and how they're funding, because they funded institutions that have helped turn over those laws. You know, they've been big funders of many of the organizations that filed the Supreme Court decision around Citizen United.
Right.
So I don't mean this in a paranoid way, but I actually think there's something for all of us to learn here, how they fund ideas, they fund long-term, they fund attacks on the judicial system, and they fund attacks on laws they don't like. So it's a long answer to say, one thing we know for sure, we do not have all the information on who they're funding, what they're funding, and how they're funding.
Right.
That's for sure.
Right. But the net effect of this change in the school board to have these Americans for Prosperity candidates, these libertarian candidates, is going to be, you're arguing, the resegregation of some of the North Carolina schools?
Yes, and we're seeing it already. 700 students have been resegregated. We have in the video a interview of quite powerful with a young man who has been resegregated, who's been taken from his friends, his colleagues. And there's a school opening that was just in the paper yesterday. It's one of the first schools in this district that's essentially a resegregated school where they put people who are poorer, people of color, people who have not been doing as well into one school because they do it around geography versus what they had was a very effective program cutting across economic, socioeconomic lines, and people in the community were loving this, Tom. That's what breaks your heart when you see this video. Here's a local school, people were loving it, and the Koch brothers, with their ideology and their self-interest, using American prosperity to convince people this is not the way you want your kids to go to school.
In the minute and a half or so we have, Robert, can you describe the libertarian ideology of these guys? And you know, I mean, it's very hip right now because they're popular because of Ron Paul. He's libertarian. I'm guessing he would agree with this.
Yes. Ron Paul believes there's no government rules of any kind. And the Koch brothers, I think in some ways it's more self-serving because they are opposed to any laws of any kind that limit their ability to profit and to take advantage of local communities, to put any restrictions on their corporate enterprises, on their factories. And so we're seeing an organized assault using libertarian principles, but driven by greed, pure and simple. And the two work very well. They work hand in hand. And it's also important that people understand ideology has consequences. There are human victims at the center of what they're doing.
Well, aren't libertarian principles and greed is good the same thing? I mean, the libertarian worldview is if everybody operated in their own self-interest, period, you'd have a utopia.
Yes, and of course we know the exact opposite. But yes, that's exactly it. And the Kochs have been advocating that for many years, back with their father, who was a John Bircher, and have now, I guess the libertarians might not accept all of John Birch, but it's certainly been a long, ongoing tradition where they're willing to spend hundreds of millions of dollars in all aspects to essentially try to buy democracy by pushing at the various pressure points which are subjected to money and influence.
Or buy the institutions of democracy so they can be shut down.
Right.
Or controlled or regulated or whatever the appropriate word would be. But something that doesn't look like small d democracy any longer, it seems. At least in our opinions. Obviously, I think they actually have a different opinion.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, okay. So, the website, and get thee over there and check it out. This is really important. Koch, K-O-C-H, brothers, with an S, exposed.com. And there's links to the Facebook page and everything else. Robert Greenwald, Brave New Films. Thank you, Robert.
My pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with more. Boy, do you get what's going on? This is the cancer that is libertarianism. Welcome back to Your Need to Know headquarters. I got to tell you, this is the most amazing thing what the Republicans are up to now. Two congressmen so far have done this, Dan Webster down in Florida and Tim Griffin in Arkansas. And they both did it identically. So it appears, I mean, it may well be lots of other congressmen are doing this, Republican congressmen are doing this, and we just haven't heard about it yet, or it's going to roll out this week or next. But what they're doing, these are congressmen who are actually still holding town halls. First of all, you know, half of them aren't holding town halls. They're just not doing it. But of the ones who are, they've got this problem with people standing up and saying things like, you know, do you really mean to privatize Social Security? You really voted for that? To give grandma a voucher? Do you really think that children who literally basically don't have any food at home shouldn't get a free lunch at school? Do you really think that the federal government should not be putting money into poor neighborhoods and poor communities for education because the tax base in those communities is so shot to hell that they can't afford to pay for their own schools with property taxes? Do you really believe that? Are you really that nuts? Do you really think that billionaires should get tax cuts and oil companies should get a $4 billion a year subsidy while we're asking our children to go without health care or food or education? Do you really believe that? So what these guys have done, what these Republicans have done so far, Dan Webster in Florida, Tim Griffin in Arkansas, and I'm sure you could call their offices. Maybe they'd even send you a copy. Go to callcongress.org. The phone number's there. What they have done is when people showed up at their last town hall meetings and asked these kind of tough questions, they took their pictures. They recorded them. And then they put some, who knows, private detectives, staffers, who knows, on them, found their Facebook pages, found all the personal information that they could get, and then they created wanted posters, a wanted poster with five or six names on it, with the faces, the pictures, and the addresses, and the information about these people, and how to contact them, and, you know, who they are, and where they are. And when the next town hall was held, excuse me, they passed these things out, these wanted posters, to everybody by way of saying, if you ask a tough question, you're going to be on this wanted poster next. And also by way of punishing the people who asked the last tough questions. So, for example, one person on the list is a cancer patient who asked Congressman Webster, this is Dan Webster from Florida, who asked Congressman Webster, what might happen to people like her under the Republican budget proposal? That's all. She's a cancer patient. She's 66. Another is a 66-year-old Vietnam veteran who, upon hearing the list, that he was on the list, because he got up and asked a question. He says, That's pretty weird. Someone asks a legitimate question, all of a sudden somebody's got a dossier on you. It's the kind of thing they used to do in old Russia. Be afraid. Be very afraid. This is the new Republican strategy. I mean, they're trying to prevent people from voting. Okay, if you don't have enough money to buy a car, you don't have a driver's license, you can't vote. If you're a college student, we're going to make it really, really hard for you to vote. If you live in an inner city where you don't need a car and you don't have a driver's license, you can't vote. If you're going to go out and register people to vote, you know, the League of Women Voters has in many states stopped registering people to vote because these states have passed these laws promoted by the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, this Koch Brothers funded group that where literally Republican members of state legislatures, state house assemblies and senates come and sit side by side with corporate CEOs and front men and lobbyists and vote on legislation that has been written by the lawyers for the corporations, and then they introduce it in their states. And in some states now, if you, for example, if you register somebody to vote, everything's nice, fine, legal, and you turn it in 4 days after you did rather than 3 days, you can get a fine. You get slapped down. I mean, they're trying to criminalize registering people to vote. They're trying to criminalize voting. This is not a new strategy. The Republicans have been running on this strategy for a long, 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 long time. You know, frankly, our leverage goes up as the voting populace goes down in our elections, right? You remember, I've played that clip so many times, you're probably echoing in your ears. Well, what the hell? Here we go again.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Paul Weyrich, Republican strategist for Ronald Reagan, George Herbert Walker Bush, and George W. Bush. And now, and recently deceased, and now we're seeing his efforts come to fruition. Absolutely incredible. Meanwhile, Colin Powell is calling out Dick Cheney's cheap shots in a new book. Here is Colin Powell, clip two, Jacob.
My head isn't exploding, and I haven't noticed any other heads exploding in Washington, D.C. But what really sort of got my attention was this way in which he characterized it. It's going to cause heads to explode. That's quite a visual. And in fact, the kind of headline I would expect to come out of a gossip columnist or the kind of headline you might see one of the supermarket tabloids write, it's not the kind of headline I would have expected to come from a former vice president of the United States of America. Mr. Cheney has had a long and distinguished career, and I hope in his book that's what he will focus on, not these cheap shots that he's taking at me and other members of the administration who serve to the best of our ability for President Bush.
No, he's focusing on the cheap shots, and he's talking about how he's a war criminal and proud of it, and he doesn't mention the fact that he got 5 deferments from going to Vietnam. Doesn't mention it at all. Not a word. No siree, Bob. Colin Powell, who served his country with distinction. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
It's the wealth inequality gap, by the way. $2 out of $3 in America in the last couple of years went just to the top 1%. What?
Into a rain morning and I step outside and I take a deep breath and I get real high and I scream from the top of my lungs, what's going on?
Truth. In broadcasting, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number, tomhartman.com, our website, and amazing. Amazing everything that's going on. What I find amazing is that the whole libertarian idea that we are not in all, we all in this together, that we the people should be rejected for me the individual. I got mine, screw you. That kind of mentality, or he's got his, screw the rest of us, that has ascended to such a height in America that these libertarians are taken seriously, or that they have so much power. The Koch brothers promoting these libertarian ideas, Ron Paul You know, people don't understand what he really stands for. They think he's anti-war. Great. Most Americans are anti-war. They think he thinks marijuana should be decriminalized. Of course it should. In fact, there's this really good research showing that it prevents and kills cancer. It's certainly, you know, it's a useful drug. So, you know, let's end the stupid drug wars already. But that doesn't mean that you go along with Ron Paul's entire agenda of ending Medicare, ending Medicaid, ending Social Security, ending public education, ending, you know, basically everything. End the EPA, do away with the EPA, do away with federal food inspectors. Forget about the precautionary principle. Just wait until enough people die. Then the companies will change their behavior. No, they won't, Ron Paul. They will change their names. But anyway, enough of my rant. Let's hear yours. Hollis in Leonard, Texas. Hey, Hollis, what's up?
Oh, not much. It was pretty nice this morning. We had a rain first time in Texas here in a long time.
Wow.
My neighbor lost a 60-foot limb off his mammoth California oak, you know, from this drought. But you know how it is.
Yeah.
Well,
God's been punishing your state for having Rick Perry there. No, I'm just kidding.
Punishing us for worshiping riches and not life.
Well, if anybody's punishing anybody, I would say Mother Earth is punishing us for pumping billions of cubic.
You're worshiping riches and burning fossil fuel to get more.
Yeah.
You curse yourself.
Yep.
You know, because that's what libertarians are doing. They're worshiping riches. You know, Christ said you cannot worship riches and God.
Yep.
And the only way you can worship God is to worship your neighbor's good.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a simple thing when you just aren't worshiping the right people.
Okay.
You know, when you're worshiping something that's dead, riches, and not your neighbor.
Yep.
You have these problems.
Okay. Well said. Hollis, thank you very much for the call. Craig in Devil Hills, North Carolina. Hey, Craig, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I kind of got excited when you started talking about my favorite candidate, Michelle Bachmann.
Uh-huh. She has come out now in the last few hours and apparently and said when she said that God was trying to get our attention that she was just making a joke.
Oh, yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think she understands what that means. But, you know, I was telling the lady that called, that I spoke to, this is mainly why I called, was the fact that, you know, unfortunately, I've got a daughter who's currently in jail. But she's telling me how there are people that are trying to get in jail just so they'll have a place to sleep, just so they can get three meals, and they can get medical help that they could not get otherwise on the street. Now, to me,
wow,
that's sick.
Yeah.
Now, and as far as, you know, like the voting thing, I haven't been able to vote since I was 18. Now, that was almost 40 years ago because, you know what I did? It was so horrible.
No.
I sold 2 ounces of marijuana to an undercover cop.
And you live in a state, you live in North Carolina. In North Carolina, you cannot, as a convicted felon, you cannot vote?
Well, this was in Virginia at the time,
uh-huh,
and I lost my right then, and, you know, anyway.
It has followed you.
Back. And, yeah, I'm now just, you know, I'm never going to ever have that right.
Yeah.
And I just went through this whole thing about trying to get a liver transplant from Duke. Now, that's got nothing to do with that, but because I'm on Medicare. You know, I mean, like this is what I've chosen to do with the rest of my life. You know, like I'm trying to get by on nothing.
Right.
But fact is, you know, they're telling me that if I want to get this liver transplant, I've got to come up with the money on my own. $100,000 at least.
Whoa.
I've got to go around, put my little face on a jar, stick it on the counter, and run, have fundraising campaigns and doing all this kind of stuff. I mean, it is sick, Tom.
Yeah.
It is sick, and it's making me so mad I can't stand it.
Yeah. Craig, well, I'm sorry to hear your story. I wish you the very best. I hope all of our viewers and listeners will hold you in light or prayers or whatever is appropriate for them, and things work out. But and thank you for your call, Craig.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing your story with us. That's a tough one. It's a tough one. Chris in Vernon, New Jersey, says you're a Ron Paul supporter. Ron Paul would have him pay not just the $100,000, but the whole load.
Well, Tom, I'm 28, and I've been listening to you since you were on 1600 New York Live. So I guess about 6 years ago I started listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned most of what I know about politics from you, and most of the stuff that I consider important issues are the Patriot Act, the Federal Reserve, Military Commissions Act, FISA, and a lot of our loss of freedoms. I'm not married. I don't own a house. I don't have any kids. I'm a union electrician. I've been out of work for almost 2 years.
Well, Ron Paul doesn't think that you should have a right as a union.
You want to know something? I don't agree with everything he says, but I agree with a lot of what he says, and most of what I agree with what he says is why we're in a situation we are now.
Sure.
What you said before the break was that two out of every $3 in the last 3 years have gone to billionaires, I believe it was.
To the top 1%, terms of new income in the United States. Two-thirds of all new income in the United States.
And there's 400 people in this country who own more than the bottom 50% combined.
Right.
And this is under our two-party system. And to me, our two-party system and across the world, you know, there's socialism across the world, there's communism around the world, and all of those countries think that capitalism and democracy is bad, just like we feel about those systems. And to me, it's all a sham because throughout the world, you have a handful of people that control everything. And
but, you know, I'm with you on the Patriot Act and all those things where Ron Paul is right. But if he were president, he would increase that inequality.
See, I believe that with less government, though, people will pay more attention. Obama's putting in people from Monsanto, from GE. So the problem is there because people rely on the government to take care of everything for them. Oh, we voted Obama, and he's going to take care of everything. And it doesn't happen that way because people won't pay attention to what's going on. Look at our food. Look at what we eat. Look at our fuel. It's made up of corn now, which ends up messing up cars in the long run. Like you said, natural gas. This is all under the two-party system we have now. And I believe that if Ron Paul is elected or at least gets to debate Obama, I believe we'll get some serious talk that no other candidate will provide. That you, like I said, I learned most of what I know from you. And the only candidate besides, Dennis Kucinich, I agree with a lot of what he says too. The only candidate I've ever heard say all the things that you talk about that is wrong with this country is Ron Paul. And
He's not. He's Ron Paul is
the revolution of man.
Chris, calm down for a minute.
Where he's coming from.
Just calm down for just a minute. The reality is that, for example, let's say between you and your doctor. Right. The big talking point that Ron Paul was using was, do you want government between you and your doctor? As if the alternative should be, no, I don't want anybody between me and my doctor. But the fact of the matter is that unless you're a billionaire or a multimillionaire, if you get seriously ill like our last caller and need a liver transplant, you're going to need somebody between you and your doctor. And the question is, do you want that to be, let me finish my sentence, Chris. The question is, do you want that to be somebody that you elected, that you can throw out of office every 2 years, that you can visit their office, that you can call up and lobby, that you can call out in an article in the newspaper, in other words, an elected official, or somebody who is we the people, or do you want that to be an anonymous face at United Healthcare who will not take your calls, or the CEO who will have you arrested if you stand out in front of his building with a sign?
Well, Medicare is broken too. My girlfriend works in a nursing home, and there's tons of problems.
Answer my question, Chris. Who do you want between you and your doctor? A big, profitable corporation run by a billionaire, or an organization, or our government that is paid for and the decisions are made by you and me? Your choice.
Tom, look at how much
you get to pick what.
Costs have gone up since government has been involved in health care. Look at how much it's gone up.
All of those. Chris, you are not answering my question. You are reciting Republican talking points. All of those costs that have gone up have gone up as a consequence directly of Republican policies like Medicare Part D, or they have gone up directly as a consequence of corporations screwing us, increasing our profits, and paying more money to their CEOs.
Tom, since you've been...
We are the only country in the world, of the 34 OECD countries, the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, the most developed countries in the world, we are the only one of those 34 nations that allows a for-profit health insurance company to even exist in the country. In any of those other countries, if you tried to do it, you would go to jail. It would be the end of your career. You would be in prison. Why? Because all those other countries get it, that when the prime motivation is profit, which is what Ron Paul believes it should be for everything, when the prime motivation is profit, people get hurt.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back with more of your calls, and we'll check in with Talk Radio News Service right after this, 45 minutes past the hour. Yep, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, standing up for what's right. And Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Victoria, it looks to me like you are in the luxury suite in the basement of the White House that is reserved and leased by the Talk Radio News Service.
Oh, yes. That is exactly where I am. And it's very exciting today because as we are in the basement, we have flooding.
Really? There's flooding in the basement of the White House?
Well, because we had Irene.
Oh, so we haven't taken a wide shot, but you're actually sitting in water up to your knees?
Well, not I, fortunately. The booth next to me, Salem Radio had it, and American Urban Radio had it. We were spared. That's because we're good.
That's right. And just ask Michelle Bachmann, because all the rest of us are getting whacked because we haven't cut government spending enough. We haven't hurt enough poor people.
That's right. But she said it in jest, she says now.
Yes.
Yes,
yeah.
It was jest.
Yes. It was just a joke. Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
So what's going on in the world?
Well, the president announced today in the Rose Garden, and I was there, that Princeton professor Alan Krueger will be his new chairman of the Council of Economic Advisers, if indeed he can get him past the Senate. Mm-hmm. The administration's gearing up for a full fight with Republicans over how to create jobs and reduce the deficit. Krueger is considered one of the country's labor economists, has served as assistant secretary for economic policy and chief economist at the Treasury Department from 2009 to 2010. I have spoken with Joseph Ficera, CEO of Sabre Partners, a New York financial advisory firm. Now, Ficera serves on Princeton's Center for Economic Policy Studies and is a visiting professor there, and somebody whose opinion I value when it comes to economic issues and knows him well. Says he's an excellent economist, mild-mannered, a great labor economist at a time when jobs are finally becoming the priority for the administration.
That's great news. Here's the other side of it. At 11:00 and 16 seconds this morning, I received an email from RNC Research at GOP.com.
Indeed.
And the daily talking points that the Republican Party sends out to every talk show host in America. And so I'll tell you in advance to all of our listeners, if you want to know what the Sean Hannity show is all about today, here it is. Who is Alan Krueger? Obama nominates advocate for $500 billion tax increase through value-added tax to lead his economic advisors. Back in 2009, he was in favor of a VAT tax. I'm actually in favor of a VAT tax, even though it's a consumption tax, because you can use a reverse VAT tax as a form of reverse tariffs, which is what Germany does to protect their domestic manufacturing. Anyhow, he has come out and said a consumption tax is a greater burden for the poor who spend a relatively higher share of their income, so he doesn't want straight income taxes. He's advocated increases on energy production, on taxes on oil companies. That's a horrible thing, according to the RNC. And he said that the $825 billion stimulus actually helped the economy.
Indeed, that's scary.
He
also has said that an increase in the minimum wage does not always increase unemployment.
Yes. How could this man be so insane?
He also did a very interesting study of the economics of rock music when he found that mixed-sex groups tend to command the lowest ticket prices and female bands command the highest.
Oh, that's interesting.
Very interesting.
So we have a very eclectic economist here.
Yeah, he's a very interesting guy.
Yeah. Okay.
The question is whether the Council for Economic Advisers is going to be taken seriously, one, and two, whether he can get past the Senate. He's got past the Senate before, but it's a different time.
Yes, and right now the Republicans are not inclined to do anything for Barack Obama that might help him be functional or effective as president. They want to hobble him so that he is, you know, limping into November 2012, and the economy is limping along with him so that they can win. So is it possible that he could just say, okay, we're not going to go for Senate confirmation. I'm just going to put this guy in on an interim basis or, you know.
Well, he doesn't have any recesses anymore because Congress never goes into recess anymore because they always put Tea Partiers in to show up every 3 days and jump up and down.
Right.
Because so he can't have.
But I mean, could he hire this guy as, you know, an assistant secretary to. You know, yeah, just, I mean, you know, just some job that he's got a budget for.
No, not now that he's had him out in the Rose Garden. No.
Okay.
Too late.
Oh, well.
Too late.
Because that's kind of what he did with, what's her name? Who's now going to be running in for the Senate in Massachusetts.
Elizabeth Warren, yeah.
Elizabeth, it's kind of what he did with her.
It worked for her. We don't know if it'll work for her in the Senate, but it definitely worked for her for a while.
Yeah. Okay, so Alan Krueger, keep your eye on that. What's up? What else is up?
Meantime, over in Algeria, that is where Muammar Gaddafi's wife and three children are apparently, according to Algeria's foreign ministry. So that makes Algeria the pariah of the world.
Hmm. Does that mean Muammar Gaddafi himself may be there?
That's not what the foreign ministry is saying. It's saying they have the wife and the three children. They're not saying that they have Gaddafi himself. He apparently is still on the loose somewhere.
Okay.
Meantime, the Scottish government is taking aim at critics of its decision to release the Lockerbie bomber Al-Megrahi a day after CNN found him comatose and near death.
Mm.
The Scottish government is hitting back, particularly at some leading U.S. senators who were very critical of Scotland's decision to release him from prison in 2009 on the grounds that he had cancer and was not likely to live more than 3 months. Of course, he has. But the Scottish government said today, as has always been said, Al-Megrahi is dying of a terminal disease. Speculation about Al-Megrahi in recent days has been unhelpful, unnecessary, and indeed ill-informed.
Right, and sometimes people live longer than you expect.
Indeed. Then, of course, we turn to Irene, and the question is, how is it going to be paid for? House Majority Leader Eric Cantor said last week, when the earthquake struck his town of Mineral, Virginia, that Congress will find the monies to help victims, but that those monies will be offset with appropriate savings or cost cutting elsewhere.
We got to cut out school lunches for kids?
Maybe the EPA. Agriculture. I don't know. I'm speculating wildly now.
Okay. All right. Well, Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, my favorite speculator. Hey, Victoria, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
And brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, by the way. Ellen Ratner's birthday charity. We'll be right back. Up next to Rumble, tax cuts for Main Street or billionaires.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, the third hour of our program. And Gretchen Hamill is with us. She is the executive director of Public Notice, thepublicnotice.org, a conservative think tank. Would you describe it, Gretchen?
Oh, no, more of an information group. We're a complete education organization, not a think tank.
Okay, advocacy or, yeah, okay, education. Tax cuts for Main Street or only for billionaires? The tax, this 2% cut in the payroll tax that President Obama worked out with the Republicans as part of the whole extend Bush tax cuts and extend unemployment insurance is going to run out in the next month or three. And I find it very interesting to see the debate on the Republican side about it, because on the one hand, it's a tax cut, and Republicans just kind of love tax cuts. On the other hand, it's a tax cut that only affects people making under $106,000, principally, massively affects people making $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year, putting an average of $1,000 a year in working people's pockets, and therefore might stimulate the economy going into the election and make things a little better for Obama. So Republicans seem to be very opposed to it politically. What's your take on this?
Well, I think there's hypocrisy on both sides here. I think you have...
I'm talking about both sides of the Republican Party.
Oh, I'm talking about Democrats and Republicans.
Okay.
There is some hypocrisy on both sides here, where Democrats don't normally want tax cuts or asking for a tax cut, and here Republicans normally love tax cuts, but they're not wanting a tax cut. So I think there's hypocrisy on both sides that you can point to.
Okay, and so what do you think should be done?
Well, I mean, we don't advocate one side or another side on a lot of issues, especially issues like this one. What we educate folks on are what they need to know about these different...
So what are you educating people that they need to know about this?
We haven't even started on this one because the tax cut doesn't even expire till the end of the year. We've been busy educating people on, you know, cuts that they can have. Like, we're having a defense event later on, or actually in the middle of September up on Capitol Hill with folks from Center for American Progress and the Cato Institute and so many others to discuss, you know, ways that we can actually cut defense spending instead of saying, no, we can't cut that sacred cow. So right now we're strictly focused on the end of the fiscal year and making sure that the government is funded for the next fiscal year in a way that is efficient and smart and effective. And so we haven't even talked about this.
That all sounds so sweet and so elegant.
We try to be.
Yeah.
Like you.
All right. Well, Gretchen, I'm... Okay, I guess we'll have to leave it at that then, because I don't have
I mean, we don't have to leave it at that. I think there's a number of things that we can talk about here, that the payroll tax has jumped from a sixth of federal revenues in 1960 to a third today. So that's why Republicans are against actually having it be implemented, is because right now they're looking at it as a deficit reduction instrument. And this is normally a view that Democrats take, as taxes being a deficit reduction
instrument. But if it's gone from a sixth of the federal government of this is a tax that affects people making under $100,000 a year. So you're saying working people have doubled or tripled the amount of federal revenues that they're paying. And why? And at the same time, we know that, you know, taxes on the very wealthy have dropped. In fact, the top 400 individuals have seen their taxes in the last 10 years cut in half.
Mm-hmm.
So why not call for a tax increase on rich people?
Well, you can call for a tax increase on rich people all you want, but rich people have something that we don't have, and that's the power to buy knowledge and knowledge of how to...
They have the power to buy politicians.
So they can either move their money elsewhere, move to a different country, and they can avoid those taxes. So I think that's, you know, one thing a lot of people say when they look at those who, the 400 top individuals, aren't paying taxes because they can afford tax attorneys to actually learn all the tax loopholes.
No, it's not that they learn the tax loopholes. It's that they write the tax loopholes.
You
think those tax loopholes just appeared out of nowhere, like, you know, back before Van Leeuwenhoek, you know, you put some straw in the corner and suddenly you'll have mice, spontaneous generation?
I agree with you that there are probably constituents of those congressmen who actually authored those.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of them. You've got Paul Ryan the other day, his largest campaign contributor, S.C. Johnson and Company. They import into the United States these air fresheners that are electronically heated. And he stands up on the floor of the House of Representatives and says, I'm here to advocate for a reduction in tariffs for air heaters that are electronically heated so that the S.C. Johnson Company can lower their cost of doing business and increase their profits.
But aren't they also constituents of his? Actually, you know, wouldn't that actually...
They are his number one campaign donor. No, corporations are not constituents. I'm sorry. People, voters are constituents.
But maybe that company actually employs some of his constituents.
Then let those people speak up.
Do you not believe that people who import goods to the U.S. actually create jobs?
No.
You don't?
No.
So you believe that the longshoremen who are, you know, out there bringing in those goods, taking them off the ships...
Actually, the vast majority of these shipping sites that you see in these ads on TV where people are walking around with these big empty containers are non-union sites, first of all. And
really?
Secondly...
So Portland, Oregon,
and
San Francisco,
you know, yeah, I used to live there in Portland.
I've toured so many of them, and I never knew that they were non-union.
Many of them are.
I've met so many of those union guys. I guess they were lying to me.
But that's not the point. That demand, yes, importation may create some jobs offloading ships. Big whoop. You know, we have lost 50,000 factories in the United States in the last 10 years.
Why do you think we've lost these factories?
Because we bought the free trade Kool-Aid 20 years ago.
Oh, really? Huh, so you think that because...
Gretchen, yes!
Don't you think that if it was cost-effective to do business here in the U.S., that those companies would still be here in the U.S.? And also,
Gretchen, do you know what the first thing that George Washington did when he was told when he was informed by his friend Henry Knox that he had been elected president of the United States and in 30 days had to present himself in New York for his inauguration, was he sent Henry to Connecticut to buy a suit made in the United States, because at that time there was one company in the entire United States that had been operating underground and violating the British laws and making fine clothing for men in the United States, to buy so that he could wear a suit made in America. His Secretary of Commerce, Alexander Hamilton, in 1791, proposed what's called his Report on Manufactures, proposed an average 30% tax, an import tariff on imported goods into the United States. It was ratified by the Congress in large part by 1793, and from 1793 until the 1980s in the United States, the average tariff on imported goods in the United States was between 28 and 35% at all times.
Wow.
And during that time, we built the biggest and strongest industrial power in the world. The tariffs on imported goods into the United States represented 100%, 100% of all the federal income into the United States federal government from the time of George Washington's administration until Abraham Lincoln's administration.
Well, how do you feel about President Obama advocating for three new free trade agreements?
I think he's wrong.
Really? You think he's wrong?
He's absolutely wrong. We need to say this does not work. This is insane. China's protecting their economy. Look how it's working for them. Japan protecting their economy. It built their economy. South Korea. In South Korea, in 1965, when Park took over South Korea, the average income of the average person in South Korea was under $800. Their major export was human hair for wigs. He put into place protectionist policies, and boom, they became a superpower. Germany protects their domestic industries. They do it by reversing their VAT tax. It's the effect of a reverse tariff. We need an industrial policy in the United States. Ronald Reagan took it apart. Bill Clinton put the nail in the coffin when he signed NAFTA and GATT, and it's insane. It's destroyed the middle class.
What about all the corporations that depend on those cells outside the U.S.?
To hell with them.
Really? So
yes, I'm an American. If a corporation wants to behave in a way that serves their interests and does not serve my country, to hell with them.
How do you think that not having a free trade agreement that allows Americans and allows American businesses to have access to 95% of the consumers of this world, which live outside these borders, how do you think that doesn't benefit the U.S. citizens?
There are 4 billion people on this planet who live on less than $2 a day. Having access to them as consumers, I don't think is a big deal.
No,
having access to them as cheap labor is a huge big deal for General Electric and Apple and everybody else.
So many, so many countries that benefit from free trade agreements that lift them out of poverty. So
name
they don't
one.
Have to live on $2.
Name
Look
one.
At India.
It's not free trade. They got India's protecting their economy, Gretchen.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Gretchen, do your homework. Seriously, India is protecting their economy. Anyhow, Gretchen Hamill, thepublicnotice.org. Welcome back, Tom Hartman, here with you. Susan in Milwaukee. Hey, Susan, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hi, Tom. Thank you so much for taking my call, and thank you for your program. This issue of Social Security and privatization, I'm telling you, I just, it's pure insanity.
Well, it's not just Social Security. The libertarians want to privatize Social Security so Wall Street can make money on that. They want to privatize our public schools so Neil Bush can make money on that. They want to privatize our medical so that, it just goes on and on and on. Anywhere there is the commons, anywhere there's something that we all need and that we should collectively own, they want to chop it up so that, because it's essential stuff. It's the kind of stuff that you have to live. And
That's right.
So they
and
can make money.
I'm at the front lines right here in Wisconsin with good old Scott Walker and Fitzwalker Stan, and it is ugly. It is really ugly. And I have to tell you what people don't realize, and I'm hearing a lot of young voices on these libertarian sides, and I really wonder how much life experience they have. Because I think what most people don't even realize is that as we speak, the premiums that they pay just for their disability insurance that they get through work, if they never had to file a claim, they don't understand that if they did have to file a claim, if they did get disabled, as my daughter did, at age right after she graduated from college, she was working full-time, paid her premiums. She had the spontaneous pneumothorax. She was a vegetarian, lived a very healthy life, graduated with honors. This was a, you know, good, strong girl.
You know, I just had a doctor call and talk about a patient with the exact same condition.
I was like, wow. You know, a spontaneous pneumothorax is something you cannot, you can't foresee it. My daughter had it happen.
This is two times in 9 years that I've had that word appear on this show, and they were both within 10 minutes of each other. That's amazing. Anyhow, as you were saying, Susan.
Yeah, well, she had five of them in a row.
Wow, this is collapsed lung, basically, right?
Yes, yes. And they literally have to glue your lung to your chest.
It happened to one of my brothers. I'm familiar with it.
Yes, so, okay, so you know, and it is just a horrible thing to go through. So she was 100% disabled. And I spent, oh my God, to get her disability insurance through a big insurance company was such a major battle, and I had to do it for her. Mm-hmm. Because she was in no condition to do it.
Right.
And that's where I think people, unless they have experienced some of this, they are so clueless as to the fact that as we speak, these insurance companies aren't paying their claims.
Yep.
They're doing everything possible not to pay claims.
Yep.
And it took so much battling for me even to get her what she was entitled to by paying her premiums, putting this in the hands of private companies who are, the bottom line is to make money is pure insanity.
Yep. I am totally with you. Susan, thank you very much. Very, very well said. I appreciate it. John at Huntington Beach. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Hey, pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you.
Hey, I just want to talk to you because I'm a conservative, but I really connect with you when you talk about the problems related to large corporations in this country and how they damage it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel as these corporations get larger, they become more fragile. And then they kind of dictate policy to governments or politicians.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's called monopoly.
I think it's hurting the country.
Yeah, it's called monopoly and oligopoly and oligarchy and the corporations and their the billionaires behind them become basically oligarchs. So the response to this from Senator Taft of Ohio in 1881, who, by the way, if my recollection serves me right, was a Republican. Was Senator Sherman was the Sherman Antitrust Act, which says that corporations can get to a certain size, but they can't get larger than that because at that point it harms the public good and it harms capitalism. It diminishes the ability of small and medium-sized companies to compete in an environment that is completely dominated by big players. And in large part, this was in response to John Rockefeller, who was conspiring with the railroads to refuse. He would pay the railroads to refuse to transport his competitors' kerosene and oil products. And because they couldn't get them to market, they went bankrupt. And then he'd go in and buy them out on pennies on the dollar. And that's one of the major ways that Standard Oil became as big as it was. So let's put an end to this, right? That was the Sherman Antitrust Act.
Well, see, I think another problem is that large corporations create different types of technologies. I think they tend to commodify labor. I think you see that real wages for most Americans has been stagnant, if not deflationary,
yep,
over 30 years.
Yep.
They tend to create technologies that commodify intelligence. We need
so if John, companies. John, pardon my interrupting you, but we only have a minute till the break, and I just got that cue. If you are with me that big corporations are a threat not just to America but to capitalism, why do you call yourself a conservative?
Because I truly believe in free markets. I believe in small companies. I believe the best way to reduce.
But you
the
can't
power
have a free market without a regulated marketplace. It's like having a free baseball game with no rules.
Hey, I believe there's a role for government. I tend to be more libertarian, but I believe that.
But the libertarians want there to be no rules.
Well, I'm not that. I just say we need more small companies. You can't let people.
It sounds to me like you're an Eisenhower Republican or a Clinton Democrat.
Well, I just think if you want to bring down big corporations, you need more small companies because they're the ones that create true innovation. They're the ones who
as long as big corporations are allowed to exist, you know, when Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Act in 82 and you had all these mergers and acquisitions, which are continuing to this day, that's why when you walk into a shopping mall in America, you don't see small local companies anymore. And it's about government policy.
A lot of the regulations, though.
Pardon?
A lot of the regulations we make.
No, but the regulation was you can't get too big.
Small companies can't afford these regulations.
Oh, no, come on. Don't give me that, John. John, thanks for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, the good, the bad, and the very incredibly ugly. Stick around. Yep, that would be the good, the bad, and the very, very jumentiously ugly, brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, a supplement for the brain. I'm drinking right now. Anyhow, all right, was 5 minutes ago. The good, the Marathon County Central Labor Council. With Labor Day just 1 week away, folks in Wausau, Wisconsin are planning their annual Labor Day parade, and this year, there's some people who are not invited. According to Randy Ratke, the president of the Marathon County Central Labor Council, conservatives are not invited to participate in this year's Labor Day parade. Ratke told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, usually they've been in the parade, but it seems like they only want to stand with us one day a year, and the other 364 days, they don't really care. Ratke then went on to say, it should come as no surprise that organizers choose not to invite elected officials who have openly attacked workers' rights or stood idly by while their political party fought to strip public workers of their right to collectively bargain. I'd take it a step further and say those that don't recognize the rights of working people to organize shouldn't even get the day off either. The bad, Ron Paul. As a 1,000-mile-wide hurricane ripped through the eastern seaboard of the United States, leaving at least $7 billion of damage in its wake and killing more than 20 people, Congressman Ron Paul figured it's a great time to bash FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. You know, the guys who help out when hurricanes hit? Paul went on Fox So-Called News to say, FEMA is a system of bureaucratic central economic planning, which is a policy which is deeply flawed. Anyone who wants to defend this department and this agency, they have a tough argument to argue for. Hear that, America? Under Ron Paul presidency, whenever a natural disaster strikes, you're on your own. Maybe it is a good thing that the media ignores Ron Paul every once in a while. And the very, very ugly Puerto Rican Senator Robert Arango, the senator who also served as the vice chairman of President George W. Bush's reelection campaign in Puerto Rico, resigned over the weekend for the usual reasons for Republicans to resign, posting nude photos of himself online. Actually, it's happened to Democrats, too. Arango posted the lewd photos on an iPhone app known as Grindr, that caters to gay and bisexual men. The real kicker is that Arango is a fiercely anti-gay advocate, spearheading efforts against gay marriage rights in San Juan. He initially tried to defend the photos, one featuring him on all fours, stark and naked, by saying, you know, I've been losing weight. As I shed that weight, I've been taking pictures. I don't remember taking this particular picture, but I'm not going to say I didn't take it. Well, he did take it. And I'm not sure which is uglier, is anti-gay hypocrisy or the photo itself. We'll call them both very, very ugly. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number. And Homer in Champaign, Illinois. Hey, Homer, what's on your mind today?
Hey, how you doing today, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better, Homer. I hope the same is true for you.
Well, yeah, no, I love your show, and I really appreciate what you guys do. And I'm watching from Free Speech TV, and you know, we have to have more guys like you out there speaking the truth.
Thank you.
Again, a few things that are wrong. Privatizing Social Security, Medicare, public schools, again, union busting. We're not doing enough for the military. I mean, the libertarian movement, I mean, these people, I think, just don't have a good understanding of you know, U.S. history. you know, what you had talked about earlier about, I mean, you basically, about the Republicans, one of the Dan Webster in Florida. I mean, that gives me hints of McCarthyism and blacklisting, you know, fellow Americans. And to me, that puts a chill in my stomach. And I just can't imagine our country going this route. And us as Americans standing by letting this happen.
Yeah, well said, Homer. The thing that libertarians fail, and thank you for the call. You said it very well. The thing that libertarians fail to get, and tragically, I think that probably for most libertarians, it's just, you know, a lack of having a good civics class in high school. I mean, literally, I mean that. Or junior high school or elementary school. I mean, I learned civics in the fourth grade. We had to memorize the preamble to the Constitution and the Gettysburg Address. We learned about the three parts of government. But the most important thing that I learned in the fourth grade was this thing called the commons, that there's this stuff that we all own in common, and the reason we all own it in common is because it's stuff that nobody should be able to stake out and say that it's theirs and we can't have access to it. Things like the air we breathe, the water we drink, the systems that sanitize our waste so that our cities are safe and our water is not polluted. Our energy sources. Now, you know, I'm an old fart. Back when I was a kid, the vast majority, right now it's over 50% of all the electricity produced in this country is produced by publicly owned utilities. It should be all, not just 50%. Our healthcare system. In every other developed democracy in the world, every other developed country in the world, the healthcare system is part of the national infrastructure. It's considered the commons because healthcare is considered a right, not a privilege. The United States is the exception to that. Libertarians don't understand this idea of the commons. Corporations do, however, because what they try to do is internalize profits and externalize costs. Externalize, you know, basically take in the money. The oil industry takes in the money. But they don't pay the cost of the cancers from burning fossil fuels. They don't pay the cost of global warming from burning fossil fuels. They don't pay the cost of the asthmas from burning fossil fuels. They don't pay any of that. None of that. They don't pay the cost of defending the shipping lines so that we can bring in fossil fuels from foreign countries. They don't pay the cost of the wars in those countries. They don't pay any of it. We do. So they internalize the profits. They externalize the costs. And by externalize, it means they dump it on us. And there's just something fundamentally wrong about that. Can Do in Harlem, New York. Hey, am I pronouncing your name right?
Yes, sir.
What's up?
Tom, it's an honor to be on your show. I consider you like Overman's cooler brothers and whatnot.
Bless you.
You know, I'm trying to make sense of stuff. You know, like, if I was looking for, a babysitter, and one of the candidates say that they don't like kids, I wouldn't hire that person. So I don't understand why anybody would want to elect a government, you know, a candidate who says that they need less government. Isn't that the same thing?
Yeah. I always found it absolutely bizarre that starting with the Reagan administration, you have had basically an entire Republican Party that campaigns on the slogan of elect us because we hate government and we'll give you less of it. And the government that we give you will be things like FEMA being run by a horse judge rather than an expert in disaster relief, as we saw with Katrina. But this is what Republicans do. As I said, Thomas Frank wrote an entire book about it called The Wrecking Crew. And the whole point is that the Republican mission is to wreck government because they understand that if you destroy the infrastructure of government that protects the commons, then that provides an opportunity for the billionaires and the big transnational corporations, and in some cases even foreign countries, to come in and buy the commons, own the commons, operate the commons for profit, and extract more wealth from middle-class Americans.
Because, you know, I don't understand, you know, like, it's nothing wrong with pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps. But some people aren't able to do that. And you know, as an African-American, as many grievances I have with this country, I also find that I am blessed to be in this country and to know that we have safety nets and things like that. Because I don't want to be stepping over people and, you know, people begging for alms. I mean, to a degree, we have that, but that's by choice.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't see how these people are, like, romanticizing this thing where you just go out there the route. Wild frontier, where, in fact, there's somebody actually out there trying to, like, basically enslave the population of this country now.
Sure. And the Wild West thing was actually stealing it from the Native Americans. And the fact of the matter is that without a community, Daniel Boone never would have survived. He wouldn't have even, you know, reached his teenage years. So you're absolutely right, Candu, and very, very well said. Thank you for the call. And thanks for watching us on Manhattan Neighborhood Networks there in Manhattan. Cora in Taos, New Mexico. Hey, Cora, what's up?
Hi. Well, I was just going to say this is a secular country, and I think it should remain so, but I do think we need to push back on people like Bachman because, you know, the Jewish, Christian, and Islamic faiths are all based on, as the root, the God of Abraham. And the God of Abraham is the God of land and generations, not of corporations. And for people to think it's all right to plunder their own land and people is very anti the God of Abraham. And, you know, to use these things like God is punishing us or warning us is just ridiculous. And I would rather vote for, like, a druid who dances naked around a tree because that person is more likely not to plunder his own land.
Right.
And it's like we need to really start pushing back on these nuts.
Well, here's clip four, Jacob. This is Michelle Bachman. This is for those who don't realize what Cora's talking about.
I don't know how much God has to do to get the attention of the politicians. We've had an earthquake. We've had a hurricane. He said, are you going to start listening to me here? Listen to the American people.
And, of course, what Michelle Bachman, now she's saying, I was just joking, but what she said at the time that God wants us to do is spend less money, right? She wants us to start cutting programs for what? Education, poor kids, medical care, stuff like that. I mean, that's to the best of my knowledge, that's not the God of Abraham.
Yeah, and what she also should remember is Jesus said, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, which means pay your taxes.
Right. Well said. Cora, thank you very much for the call. Great to hear from you. Very, very well said. And then we've got Rick Perry out there saying Social Security is a lie. It's a Ponzi scheme. We got Ron Paul saying abolish FEMA. I mean, it's like the crazies have come out of the woodwork. Now, I understand, you know, Mercury went direct a couple days ago. It was retrograde almost all of August. So for those who believe in astrology, I'll add another layer of weirdness here. It would make sense that strange things would happen. But now...
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Okay, earthquakes and fracking stimulating the economy, the meaning of Labor Day, comments on free trade agreements. Boy, do we have a pile of topics on our board.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming.
Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you, and Karen in Wake County, North Carolina. We've been talking about Wake County, haven't we? Hey, Karen,
hey,
what's up?
Hey, yes. Oh, I'm doing good, Tom. How are you?
Great.
Thank you for taking my call, and I appreciate it.
Now, your county
you
is the topic of what Robert Greenwald was talking about earlier in the program, where the school board was taken over by libertarians, and they're basically trying to roll it back to 1950, resegregate the county.
Yes, and it's a crime, and it's disgusting. They had a big plan on the computer. You're supposed to be able to go in and put your feedback, give them your feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And they, as soon as I put in the word that you should not segregate schools, they, like, cut me off. Everything that I filled out on that whole form was cut off. They do have online schools. They are trying to do that. They've got a new mission statement, which is totally bogus. It says, the Wake County public school system will significantly increase achievement for all the students by providing a world-class education that equips students with knowledge and expertise to become successful, productive citizens. Would be wonderful if it was true.
Yeah.
It would be wonderful.
Yeah.
They're trying to take apart our public schools, and that is un-American.
Yeah.
That is unconstitutional. And these so-called Christian Republicans, my sister being one of them, I don't understand why. She's got 10 kids. She teaches them at home. You know, they don't want to pay into the public schools. They're the ones that don't like America. They are the anti-Americans, if you ask me. They're forcing us to the children to pay $45 for mandatory driving classes, which were free in high schools, and, you know, my parents taught me how to drive. You now have to go to a corporation to pay them to get a license.
Amazing.
And so poor people can't get a driver's license.
Karen, thank you for the feedback and the update from Wake County, North Carolina.
You're welcome. Much
appreciated.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Bill in Rochester Hills, Michigan. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Yeah, yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. Love your show.
Thank you.
I would just like to, my topic kind of is on Labor Day, and I think a lot of people poo-poo Labor Day, and they just associate it with organized labor. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is it really is just as important of a holiday as 4th of July and Memorial Day, because a lot of people forget that many hundreds and hundreds of people died, and they put their lives at risk so that we can have things that we take for granted now, like vacation time, a decent vacation time, safe working conditions,
weekends,
40 hours. And a lot of people just they just brush that aside.
Yeah.
And a lot of people really need to think back on that. So when they take their next vacation or when they don't have to worry about workplace safety, or just a lot of things that we take for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And that's being threatened. And,
yep.
I'm sorry to see that. And I think especially the younger people just don't equate that with Labor Day, and they really, really should.
I'm with you. And working americaorg, I believe, is the website. If you want to join the AFL-CIO, even if you're not a union member, there are things you can do. Bill, I've got to move along, but thank you. You said it very, very well. Les in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Les, what's up?
Yes, hello, Tom. Very good to talk to you this afternoon. I wanted to speak on behalf of Medicare in particular, mm-hmm. and support of Medicare. I am a liver transplant recipient and a patient that is recovered after my liver transplant just under 2 years ago. It appears that I've recovered almost 100%.
Great.
I'm going to be, thank you very much, and going to be restarting my life as a film director and a media, documentary film director and a media director shortly. But I wanted to call you and tell your listeners that the biggest event in my life was losing my liver due to exposure from nuclear radiation at the Rocky Flats nuclear weapons manufacturing plant south of Boulder, Colorado,
mm-hmm.
Which the operators of the nuclear weapons plant, the nuclear facility there, we caught them in the people of Boulder and Denver and the communities caught them putting plutonium waste in 55-gallon drums and putting it out, that leak, and putting it out on the prairie or on the table, the mesas that overlook Boulder and Denver in those communities where they were allowed, the plutonium waste was allowed to leak into the groundwater and of our drinking water. And actually did contaminate in 1973 and 74 the drinking water of Denver, Boulder, and the surrounding community.
Wow. So you ended up with what, liver cancer from that?
I actually ended up with just it wasn't even cancer. It was a total destruction of my liver. But it takes what they told us at the time that this happened, and we were all exposed to this radiation. The operators that were, and those would have been Dow Chemical and North American Rockwell, said that they basically laughed at all of us when we said, well, what's going to happen to us, from this exposure to your radiation and your plutonium waste? They basically laughed at us and said it'll be 20 to 30 years before the actual symptoms could show up.
Right.
Before you would actually
die. And they'll be long gone by then. Les, I'm out of time, but thank you for sharing your story with us. I appreciate it, and great to hear from you. Coming up tomorrow, I'll be coming to you from the National Clean Energy Summit 4.0, the Future of Energy, live from Las Vegas, Nevada tomorrow. Be joined by a whole bunch of great guests, including the Center for American Progress's John Podesta, Senator Harry Reid, and others. So look forward to seeing you then. And don't forget, democracy begins when you get out there and active. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.